3 is an opening and closing of part of Fermor Avenue between Plessy's Road and Royal Mint Drive, and proposed closing of part of Plessy's Road south of Fermor Avenue for incorporation into DASZ 52 of 2013 under file DAOC 1 of 2013. Item 4 is a subdivision rezoning at South Fermor Avenue, north of Dawson Road South, including 1501 and 1525 Dawson Road South, under file DASZ 52 of 2013. Item 5 is a conditional use at 1501, 1525, an unaddressed lot on Dawson Road South under file DCU 115142 of 2014D. Item 6 is a variance at 1501, 1525, an unaddressed lot on Dawson Road South under file DAB 176079 of 2013D. Councillor Mays.
All right, we'll first call the applicant forward. We have a number of speakers registered. I believe Mr. Ward, McNeil, and Rosen are back.
Yes.
To take us through. So again, this is a consolidated hearing, Madam Clerk, on all of the remaining items we have before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Paul McNeil with the MMM Group. We also have a brief PowerPoint presentation associated with this, which we'll fire up in just a second. While that's warming up, the PowerPoint presentation and my comments at the end are referring to all the applications that are in front of you. As I understand, it's a combined hearing dealing with the road applications, the DASZ, the conditional use, and the variances. We've just spoken about Precinct J, so you're familiar with the area, but for those that may have entered the chamber since we dealt with this earlier, Brian, if you can go to number 2. This application falls within Precinct J, which is on the south side of Fermor Avenue and east of La Jumeaudière, as outlined on the map in front of you. Go ahead. I'd mentioned earlier talking about the precinct plan, but I, given that this is a separate hearing, I will also address this issue. We conducted 2 open houses, and we had a number of stakeholder meetings with stakeholders within the area, and we conducted 2 open houses where we invited residents from the area to come and speak to us about, to hear what our proposed plans were and to hear comments. The first of those was in September of last year, and then a second open house in March of this year. And there were a number of comments that arose out of the first open house, concerns some of the residents had, that resulted in amendments to the plan that I'll address in a minute when we get to the plan. Those amendments were then presented again in March when we conducted the second open house, and I think both open houses were well attended, and there was good dialogue between ourselves and some of the residents with respect to some of their concerns that were raised. We dealt with the area structure plan, which is the area outlined in the heavy red line. This specific application for the DASZ is in the cross-hatched red area and was mentioned during the discussion about the precinct. It includes a small portion of lands that are currently zoned M1 immediately to the west of the precinct plan area fronting on Fermor Avenue itself, and those are cross-hatched on this illustration as well. In terms of the overall land use, the areas that we've identified in the darker blue are the retail areas within the lands, the subject lands. We're also incorporating a number of commercial residential mixed-use areas, and I made reference earlier during the precinct plan that one of the things that we've seen evolving in the city with respect to the larger retail sites is not to have a homogeneous single large retail site, but more integration within the sites along the edges of mixed uses, particularly residential and commercial, so that the nature of the retail areas as you get to the edges of the sites tends to be much less intense and provides for a lot more interest with respect to introducing residential and small-scale retail along the edges. And we've taken that into account. Those are the areas that are the mustard-colored commercial mixed-use areas. Then in the south east corner of the overall plan is where we have incorporated the multifamily sites. Again, one of the things that's been evolving with respect to sites, and particularly if you look at the Linden Woods Shopping Center, initially the lands immediately behind that were multifamily, but the relationship between those multifamily lands and the commercial sites has evolved in a way that I think has surprised a lot of people in terms of the strength and the attractiveness of people living in apartments and condominiums in close proximity to a wide variety of shopping. And so that is now being incorporated, and we're seeing that in a lot more of the developments that we're working on, and we're working on several sites across the city, and we're seeing that kind of use as well. And that's so that's a little higher density residential, but it's well situated well away from the existing Southland Park area as well. Go ahead, Brian. This then takes that kind of general use and gives you a bit of an indication of the massing and the texture of what the site would look like. And I would like to draw your attention to the western edge of the site along Dawson Road. One of the, right in that area there, Dawson Road currently is a gravel road that runs along the rear of the houses that front, or that back onto Dawson that are in Southland Park. And one of the concerns that were raised at the first open house with respect to the plans were concerns by some of those residents about the use immediately behind them and how busy Dawson Road might become as a result of this. From that, we made a decision to alter our plans, and we have proposed, which is part of the closing application, to close that portion of Dawson Road and to realign Dawson Road further away up to more northerly from that. And we've done that to the limit of what we can do within our subdivision. We couldn't go beyond that. It's not our lands to deal with. But in doing that, in closing Dawson Road, it becomes part of the application as a closed portion that would then become PR and a buffer strip and would also be incorporated with the linear active transportation network within that area. And that addresses some of the concerns that were raised with us with respect to land use and traffic bordering onto those houses. The land use immediately to the north of that within the subdivision, again, has been what we've done is included that as a mixed-use retail area. Retail residential area rather than the C3 zoning. And then as you move further towards Firmore and the frontage along Firmore is where you're seeing the more intensive, intensified retail and the larger format retail uses along that edge within the C3. So it's what we've done is taken a combination of uses within this to create the plan. Then in the southeast corner of the plan, utilizing the retention basins, we have wrapped residential and a little higher density multifamily residential around those areas that are adjacent both to the retail center itself but also to the amenities of the lakes. And I should point out that one other major factor for us in developing the plan was the intent to maintain Dawson Road on its right-of-way either as a road or as an active trail as a historical nod to the significance of the Dawson Trail and the development of Manitoba over the years. And so Dawson Road, or Dawson Trail as we're referring to this area, it remains, and it's one of the areas focuses that we're going to focus on in terms of the overall marketing of this and the historical significance of that. And even though a portion of the right-of-way is being closed, it is being maintained as an active transportation trail as part of that recognition as well. Go ahead, Brian. So there are three primary uses in terms of the zoning application. The first is C3, which is the commercial corridor that fronts directly onto Firmore itself. And as you're all aware, Firmore at this point is part of the Trans-Canada Highway. It's a heavy volume, high speed transportation network, an important entranceway to the city. And in fact, we believe that this development will greatly enhance that entranceway to the city, which is a little bit understated, I think, now in terms of entry to the area, to the city. We then have the CMU, commercial mixed-use areas that I've spoken about, where the texture, the development changes. Instead of large format stores, we get into much smaller scale retail, specialty retail that's mixed in with residential and gives us the opportunity to create more detailed and pedestrian environments around these within those areas. And the RMFM, which is the multifamily district that we've wrapped around the retention ponds and parks in the southeast corner of the area. One portion of the application, the applications before you tonight deal with road closings, and I'll get to the specifics of that in a second. I've talked to one of them. The other is the DASZ, and this is the underlying map with respect to both the subdivision and the zoning. And there's a conditional use application as well, and the area that's cross-hatched here, that portion of the C3 is where the conditional use application applies. And I'll explain where that application came from. When we initially approached the administration about filing an application, it was our intent to request C4 in this area. And one of the distinctions between C3 and C4 has to do with the amount of square footage there can be in a single use, and it's capped at 120,000 within the C3. The administration had some concerns about establishing a C4 area with respect to its consistency with our Winnipeg and complete communities. And so we concluded that the best approach would be to go and apply, would be to apply for a C3, but then ask for the conditional use to allow us the ability to build, have a retailer that exceeds the 120,000 square feet. So that's specifically the conditional use application. It only affects those lands that front directly onto Firmore, which is the appropriate location. I've mentioned that there are a couple of street closings, and they're in more detail. We haven't detailed them in the PowerPoint presentation, but they're certainly in the administration's report. One of them has to do with that portion of the closing of Dawson Road that I spoke about there, and the second has to do with the closing of a section of Plessy's. Right now, Plessy's Road reaches up. It's got a dog leg to the west so that it can tie into the street before the foot of the overpass. That all becomes redundant. With the new Dawson Road that will be constructed, any of the traffic that would have been going up towards Firmore Avenue on that portion of Plessy's will be intercepted by Dawson, redirected to Firmore at the new signalized intersection. And as a result of that, that portion of Plessy's and a surplus portion of the Firmore right-of-way are being closed. At the same time, the administration has requested that Firmore be widened, and so that the application includes a widening of Firmore. And that's all along the frontage, as illustrated there by the arrow. The last component of the application, is there another slide, Brian, that deals with that? No.
The variance?
Yes. Okay. The last application, and the one that I'd like to speak about, is the variance, and the variance has to do with the height and square footage of the signs along Firmore itself. The administration is not recommending what we've asked for in its entirety in this case. We've asked for multi-tenanted pylon signs or freestanding signs of 65 feet and along the frontage. We've also asked for two fairly tall project identification signs. And I'd like to just comment on that with respect to the bylaw. I think when the bylaw was written in dealing with commercial sites at the time, we had not had experience in the city with very large retail sites on high-speed, high-volume thoroughfares. And since that time, there have been several proposed and approved and some under development in the city, the first of which was the Seasons of Tuxedo with the IKEA development and the IKEA sign, which required a variance, similar variance at that time for that single sign. Since that time, council has also approved the development of the new retail on Portage Avenue West, or the Trans-Canada West, in which case they had requested four tall project identification signs, and we feel at this location two are appropriate for the location. When I say I think the bylaw didn't take this into account, the bylaw doesn't really make a distinction in terms of retail sites as to where they are and the nature of the street. And although St. Anne's or St. Mary's may be identified as regional streets, the context of those are completely different than the context of Firmore Avenue at this location, which is more of a highway context. The right-of-way is almost 100 meters wide, 300 feet wide. It's a very wide right-of-way. The buildings are well set back. It's a high-speed area, and I think the nature of the signage that we've requested and the variances for this site are appropriate for the site, as they have been identified elsewhere in the city as these types of sites have come forward and been considered. And so on that single point, I think it's about the only point where ourselves and the administration are not completely on board, but we think there's been a reasonable precedent set elsewhere in the city, and we think the location and context to this is very much within appropriate for what we're asking for in terms of the scale of that. Following our presentation, the There's a presentation by number 10 architects who have been involved with the development of the concepts for the retail area, including the signs, and they have developed an animated drive-through to give you a bit of a context as to the overall scale of the area, to get put a little bit in context.
What are you wanting as compared to what the administration are recommending?
We have asked for two. First of all, they disagree with the tall signs entirely, but we've asked for two tall project identification signs of 150 feet each, with the square footage. Do you have the square footage? 1,600, approximately 1,600 square feet of total surface area. And on the pylon signs, we've asked for a height of 65 feet with a total surface area of 900 square feet per sign. And putting those within context, that's very similar to what exists currently on Keniston for the IKEA development, for the IKEA sign and the pylon sign that sits at the base of the taller sign as well. And again, I think it's all about context. If you took that and put that on Grant Avenue, it would be completely out of context. On Keniston Avenue, it's in context and it works. And so it's not a hypothetical example. It's a case where council decided to give it a try, and I think it's worked out quite well. And we believe the context of this location is very similar in the sense that you need that kind of exposure to be able to identify sites like this, and it's not does not have an impact, visual impact or otherwise, in the city.
And the locations? Sorry, David.
Okay, but when I'm reading the variance in front of us, it has heights ranging from 65 feet to 150 feet instead of 30 feet.
That's what we applied for.
That's what you applied for?
Right. And then if you go to the recommendations in the
You're
administration
not
report,
that.
They're
okay.
more restrictive. And to answer Councillor Swandell's question about where, the two taller signs along Firmore there near the intersection and the near the right-in, right-out. And then the pylon signs would be a total of four of them stretched out along the frontage. You also have to understand the scale of this. It's a very large frontage area that we're talking about. It's not your normal 15-acre neighborhood commercial site. This is a 50-acre highway-oriented site where, again, I think the context is quite appropriate for what we're asking for.
Okay, I was reading the report. I'm clear now.
Okay.
Continue.
I've kept the PowerPoint relatively straightforward and wanted to just to deal with two or three items in the ACG report and the planner's report. There are a number of things that we have identified that needed to be clarified, and we've been in contact with the administration. They are in agreement with these, and so I'm calling these housekeeping issues that needed to be cleaned up a little bit. One of them was that at the time the Public Works Department was asking for a turnaround at the end of Plessy's, where Plessy's was being closed. In the initial application, Plessy's was being closed further to the north, which meant it was a dead-end cul-de-sac. That was subsequently amended so that the closing came up to the intersection of Symington Road, and so there's no longer a cul-de-sac and therefore no longer a need for a turnaround, and that's been confirmed by Public Works. The second one really is a question of approach. The recommendation in the ACG report is that any of the lands that front onto public reserve, any of the private residential lands, be fenced with a continuous fence to delineate the difference between private property and the public areas. But the areas that we're developing with respect to multifamily that are around the site, in fact, may be appropriate to have openings in those fences in certain locations. And so we've asked the wording to be slightly modified so that it's not absolutely rigid in the sense that it's continuous on broken fencing. And we have a clause that I've provided to the clerk at the beginning that addresses how we'd like that addressed. I don't know if that's been distributed to you at this point. Lisa, is that being distributed to?
Yes.
Okay, you've got it. So the first item is what we've suggested that says with openings at appropriate locations subject to the review of the department and the director. And basically it gives us more latitude in terms of appropriate and more integrated design within that area because this, I think it's appropriate for that. And the third one is a clarification on the conditional use, and it's really just a wording clarification on this one, and that is that the gross floor area of an individual retail sale should not exceed 200,000 square feet, whereas the wording in the report could lead to some misinterpretation on the total square footage as 200,000 square feet. And so we're really just asking there that it's an individual retail not to exceed 200,000 square feet. With that, Mr. Chairman, I think that I will conclude that portion of the remarks. There are some issues there then. Those are the items that we're basically on board with the administration on housekeeping. There are two or three items that we would like to address. One of them is the lower of these two is the variance application on the sign height and sign surface area, which I spoke about just a minute ago.
Is that drawing that showed the location of the signs?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So how many signs do you have on the overall site?
There would be four pylon, multi-tenanted pylon signs, similar to what you see.
That's the blue dots?
That's the dark blue spread out along the frontage. And the two tall project identification signs.
Okay, so the four dark blue signs, what are the height and area of those?
We're asking for a height of 65 feet per sign and 900 square feet of sign surface area.
And the two site identification signs?
A height of 150 feet. And Brian,
it's 1,600 and... Can get the exact number here. 1,642?
1,642 with respect to the square footage on those signs. And although the number seems higher, it's really in overall context of the scale as well.
Is no signage being proposed on the CMU sites?
It would be compliant with what the
bylaw would be.
Yes. So it would be a much lower scale. The signage on the CMU is different than the signage in the C3.
Okay.
Can you go back to your last
What's,
slide?
About the firmware, Trans-Canada Highway, Firmware Avenue, what measures are you taking to ensure that the aesthetics, the design are top quality as the traffic comes into our city?
Right. I think there are two parts of that. One of them has to do with the visual aspect of it, and I think the other has to do with how we handle the traffic and safety and the management of traffic on the site. I think perhaps Ken would be more appropriate to speak to the traffic side of it. On the visual side of it, the speaker behind us will be Barry Ottenbright from Number 10 Architects, who's more involved with the actual design of the site and the buildings, and I think maybe Barry could comment on that. But it will be subject to coming back before this community committee for a much more detailed review as part of the site plan approval process. We haven't developed the detailed plans at this point because it will be triggered to a certain extent on the retail mix that we get within that area, and that has yet to be tied down with actual specific retailers, but we can talk generically about that. Ken, if you could just comment maybe in terms of what the proposed improvements are and how we're handling the intersections and the right-in, right-out, and the activity lane.
Sure. We're talking about essentially a intersection at as you see there at Firmore, that will have will be signalized, will have appropriate turning movement provisions, including a left turning movements out of the site to ensure that it's that the capacity of the intersection is not compromised. We're also talking about a right in, right out, where those two the blue and the red dots are, which would include an activity lane along the entire frontage. As a third lane eastbound, and a lane for acceleration out of the site onto the Trans-Canada eastbound as well.
Right in, right out.
That's right, right at that location where
this is
the arrow
is. There.
Yeah, which would have a full, very similar to what's on Bishop Grand in the frontage along the shopping mall there.
Ken, how close is that to where the Plessy's Road intersection is now?
Oops.
Did it again. Sorry.
You can see where Plessy Road is. It's a fair distance to the east.
But the intersection...
And the intersection is right about there.
So it's still quite a ways.
Yeah. Okay. And the idea is obviously to provide a safe acceleration lane for that eastbound traffic so that they can merge into the through traffic that's going to be heading eastbound on Fermor and across going across the CN overpass.
So how can that be? The Plessy Road extension must be further east.
Is it in this map, Dan? And I think what our intersection is right about here.
What happens, Councillor, is there's a jog in Plessy's Road.
The actual intersection is Plessy Road diverts to the west and then comes back up roughly where that arrow is and is a right-in, right-out only at that location. I don't think it's allowed. I don't think there's full direction.
That'll be gone.
So what's the right turn in and out on that's shown further to the west is basically a considerable distance away from the current Plessy Road access point. And it, again, as I said, it provides for sufficient acceleration length to get to merge the traffic into the eastbound through traffic on Fermor.
So the area that we're seeing that's on the screen has an extra activity lane?
Yes, right from basically just before the intersection on the west side, right through the intersection itself to add to and beyond the right turn cutoff.
Basically almost the full length of the frontage of the development.
Basically the full length, yes. It'll merge into the other two lanes on Fermor eastbound just before the overpass.
Okay.
So the distinction between what you're seeing today, where you have four lanes undivided, is once this is built and upgraded, you'll have separated east and west traffic flows with a center median. And on the south side with the activity lane, it'll be a full three lanes at that point through the front.
And on the north side, there's going to be another activity lane from the intersection, from the lights, all
west
the way
to Lajimoji.
Westbound to Lajimoji.
Until it intersects, yes.
And that'll be a north turning lane?
Pardon me?
And that'll be a lane to go north?
Yes. It is currently a lane, a separate lane now. That's basically going to be extended to the intersection.
Okay. And the multifamily sites, how many approximate, is that multifamily medium?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
What's the density on the mixed use?
Mixed use depends on whether you do the whole main floor as retail or not. But generally, are you talking about units per acre in terms of density? What we've seen so far developing, and a good example sort of as the maximum density would be on Provencher, where Qualico has done the development on the north side of Provencher, where you've got retail, offices, and I believe it is four floors of residential above that. That's achieving a density of around 32 to 35 dwelling units per acre.
And but what does the zoning allow for?
I don't know that we've actually looked at the density in that sense.
There's a
it's RMFM.
M?
Yeah.
You need to close Plessy primarily because of the issues you just discussed of getting off and on Fermor, or is it more to do with the development that's up at the northeast edge of the site there?
It really doesn't have to do with the development. With this development, with the upgrading of Fermor, it would have been the city's intent to close Fermor, I'm sorry, to close that access on Plessy's at any rate. And so this gave us the opportunity, since the access was no longer going to be there, then the right-of-way became surplus. And by closing it and incorporating it into the development, it takes right-of-way that it would otherwise have been surplus and unproductive, puts it into the development where it becomes part of a productive and accessible tax base for the city rather than the other.
I think you can do a left turn out of there right now.
It's possible, yes, but it's very unsafe. I would not recommend it.
No, but this actually forces that traffic to go over to controlled intersection.
Yes, it does. There's no question that this, what's being proposed, will in fact improve not only the function of Fermor, but the safety of function of Fermor, because it separates the traffic and also provides for the appropriate acceleration-deceleration lanes.
So, Councillor Vandell started out asking about the look of Fermor, you know, the aesthetic of it.
like when it's divided now, is it going to have some sort of a boulevard in the middle? Is it going to have some landscaping, or is it still going to be sort of the open ditches with just flat grass?
In separating the two lanes, and I don't think that we've got to the point of doing a detailed design, but it would typically be a raised median in the center between the east and west flows of traffic. But it is a rural cross-section. It is a highway cross-section, so it will still be surface drainage on the north side and on the south side. And it's part of the reason the right-of-way is as wide as it is and part of the reason we're set back as far as we are. But it's I think you'll find that in pretty well all areas of the city as you make that transition from urban environment to highway and rural environment. There's a section where you go through that, and this is that transition section. One last point from our perspective, Mr. Chairman, and we've had some discussion with respect to the first bullet on this with your administration, and I understand that there is some complexity with respect to what we're asking, and that is this is a very large retail site, and on other sites that I've worked on that are large as well, there's been a mechanism in place that allows us to stage when this commercial zoning comes into effect, because it takes a long time to develop these sites. I worked on the Seasons of Tuxedo and IKEA site, and I think I first opened that file 8 years ago, and we're now into the phases of development, and it's probably going to be another 6 to 8 years before we see that site fully developed out. On the very large sites like this, that's a real burden to ask the developer to carry that as fully zoned. And so in that case, although it was tied in with the strategic economic agreement, there was staged process that allowed the rezoning to come in the stages. And I understand that's a separate process. What I'm asking today is not for the community committee to make that decision, but in your approval to at least provide the flexibility for the administration to continue to examine this as to whether there's an ability as this moves up to council, and if it requires full council approval when it gets to that point, to look at an ability to stage when the rezoning comes into effect on the commercial portion of this. And so not suggesting the wording, it's really more to ensure that the wording is enabling to allow this to be further addressed and be considered at a more senior level of either the standing policy committee level or at council.
Why don't you just bring forward a smaller subdivision with a phase one that's more timely in terms of development?
I think for a couple, or there's several practical reasons for that. One, it means that, in a sense, you've got to roll the dice every time you come forward to see whether, in fact, the next stage of development would be permitted. In terms of the overall planning, to be able to have all of your zoning identified in advance as to what you're going to eventually have means that you can design your circulation systems appropriately. The community knows what to expect in the long term, and it makes it an awful lot easier in terms of marketing the site to retailers so that the retailers understand what the full nature of the site is. Anything that isn't zoned at the point where you take forward to a retailer is discounted, and therefore having the ability to have a mechanism that says these lands are going to be commercial and here's the trigger mechanism that brings them into place is very helpful in terms of the overall development on the site.
Have you looked at all at a phasing plan? A phasing plan?
We have. I talked earlier during the area structure plan about their sort of the general phasing of the area. But one of the things that we could do in terms of a phasing plan would be to identify which portions of the commercial could be triggered on certain dates, for example. So it could be either a third of the site would be zoned immediately upon adoption of the report and the execution of the agreements, with another third that would be triggered 2 years down the road or earlier in the event that there was an application to come forward, and then the third in a similar way. That's a little different than what was done before in the IKEA or the season site. Each of the lots, the rezoning was triggered on a development application or on a land transfer. In this case, we think there could be perhaps a simpler mechanism that would be put in place, but it's something that we would need to work out with the administration. So what we're asking Community Committee tonight is just to give us the enabling wording to allow us to continue that dialogue with the administration.
Okay. Duly noted.
Okay. I think we have no further questions at this time, you would be able to come back up in rebuttal if necessary. Our next registered speaker, also in support, is Eric Vogan.
Hello again, Eric Vogan. First of all, I want to say I look forward to working with ANS as the details of the area come to light, and we work on adjacent roads and such things as the cost-sharing agreement. We believe that there's a lot of value in cooperation and making sure we get the best infrastructure for the city to maintain over the longer term, so there's efficiencies for us too there, I'm sure. To clarify something that is up in the air, we are one of the owners to the south of this area. We have about 100 acres. Randall Holmes has about 50 acres, and a gentleman and his wife, Marcel and Lise Digest, have about 10 acres. And we are we've chatted, but we are unallied, so we are all independent at this point. So I just wanted to let you know that I'm not their shepherd. the activity lanes are an interesting thing. I think it's becoming evident to me that these activity lanes are generated by the high volume of traffic generated by the commercial, yet they are subject to the they'll be part of the cost-sharing agreement among the owners for transportation, so we look forward to that detailed work. And then finally, the signage issue, I guess I was caught by surprise on the scale of these things, but I believe this is an issue that is best left with the councillors on the southeast. A 150-foot high sign would be 50 feet higher than any apartment project we'd imagine in Sage Creek, and could be very easily seen from there. Who knows, maybe a sign war is an exciting thing to start on the east side of town, but I'll leave that with you to figure out. Beyond that, I look forward to getting involved and trying to catch up with these guys. Any questions?
No, thank you. Our next registered speaker, also in support, and you, of course, don't have to speak. You can just register your support, is Vince Buetti. It's okay. Our next registered speaker is Derek Chantier. Support, okay. Frank Buetti.
In support.
Barry Ottenbright.
My name is Barry Ottenbright, number 10 Architectural Group, 310-115 Bannatyne Avenue. We prepared a sign study for the Dawson Trail commercial development to illustrate the actual three-dimensional height of the proposed signs. So there's, as mentioned before, there's two different sign types here. There's a site sign that is 150 feet high. It's modeled at this point in time similar to the IKEA pylon that you see on Keniston. And then we have four 65-foot high signs as well, located at the intersections of the main intersection. There's two 65-foot signs as well as one of the 150-foot high pylons. And then at the right in and right out at the secondary entrance, there's a 65-foot high sign as well as another second pylon sign, 150 feet high. And then at the west edge of the property, there's a fourth 65-foot high sign. So the animation that we'll play in a minute here It starts as a bird's eye view here, and then it'll swoop down to the intersection of Lajimodi and Furmore, and then it does a drive down Furmore east, and there's three key points ahead of the main intersection into this shopping center, as well as a fourth view east towards the secondary entrance, and then one view looking back towards the center from the west that would give you just a fifth vantage point for traffic coming from the west. So if you can play that. For reference, we've got a car in each one of these that illustrates that we're taking these views from eye level within a driving vehicle. Pardon me?
That's pretty high.
That is high, but it is, if you actually look at, refer to the package that I passed out there with the still shots, probably one of the more critical views is that first view that you would get from the intersection of Keniston and Furmore, and that's your decision point.
Lajimodi and
Furmore. And that is, that's a key decision point for traffic. You're either coming up east, traveling down Furmore, or you're making a decision to turn left or right from Lajimodi. So it's very important that you have some type of marker, site indicator as to where the shopping center is. That's really the rationale for the high sign.
And which picture would that be, from 800 meters?
It would be the second image.
800?
The 800.
So this is what you would see from Laj and Furmore.
Right. So you can see there, and on the still images that's in your package, there is actually a little sign. It actually says sign on the fascia of the signs there. That's a 5-foot-high letter on that signage, so you can see that you can barely make out the lettering even at 5 feet at that distance. As you move closer and you go from the 800 to the 500, you'll see that message actually begins to be readable. Again, you have to keep in mind that you're traveling down this road at 90 kilometers an hour, another important reason to have a larger, more noticeable, visible sign. At the 200-meter mark, again, the main sign is clearly legible, and you can begin to read the main signage on the multi-tenant signs, the 65-foot-high signs. The 350 is, again, just a view. If you, by some measure, miss the main entrance, you can get into the center at that secondary entrance, so that really is a secondary marker for that right in and right out.
Barry, those signs are these big square things. Is there signage on all four sides of that?
Yeah, it was put there right now as a place marker. I mean, it could be, at this point, we've shown it as being four sides. It could be simplified into a double-sided sign, or we could do something along the lines of what they did at IKEA, which was a triangle, and angle it so that it was maybe a little potentially more visible, you know, with the two angled views from the east and the west.
Okay, so how is the square footage calculated?
Square footage on the high pylon sign is the total area of that upper band.
So it's the whole four sides are the square footage.
So if you were just to have a two-sided sign there, it would be, how many square feet would that be?
Well, these are 1,600 square foot total face, right?
Right.
So 400 square feet per side?
A little more than 400, yeah, just slightly more.
And the bylaw allows you how many square feet?
323.
Per side or in total?
On your side. So if you're facing, if it was a two-sided sign,
yeah,
it's counted as 323, even though technically it has double that because it's on either side.
So that's, it's 600.
Yeah, but it's 323. Yeah.
Okay. So when it asks for a variance to go to 1600,
yep,
is that 400 per side on a four-sided sign?
It's, yeah, exactly. Because it's not double-sided.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out the impact, the visual impact. If I'm driving down the road here and I've got a permitted sign is up there, is 323 square feet that I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm.
With this, I'm looking at 400 square feet, right?
Yep.
Okay. So it's not a significant...
But it's on all sides.
It's
right?
The four sides that, yeah, that create the real dilemma, not the two, not the square footage that you're faced with. Or that, not the dilemma, but it creates your scenario. But from a visual, you know, from as far as a visual consideration for a person driving down the road, the visual impact of it is really only the face that you can see.
Right. But this is also taller.
Well, I understand. I wasn't talking about height. I was talking about the square footage, trying to figure out where the square footage was.
It's two sides. Why a four-sided sign?
It was a preliminary model. It could as easily be a two-sided sign as a four-sided. We wanted to create something substantial up there. A two-sided sign would still be substantial with the type of areas we're talking about. So it could as easily be a two-sided, willing to...
But it changes the square foot ratio to the variance, whatever. Okay. It could be a two-sided sign,
yep.
So there's no...
Yep.
Okay.
But it would still need to be 1,600 square feet per side, or you know, overall?
No, it would be obviously reduced by those two other sides, so it could be a smaller area.
Could be 800 square feet.
Yeah.
Or 1,000 square feet, whatever.
Okay, thank you. Marv, are you done?
Yes, unless there's any other questions.
Doesn't look like there are any further questions.
Let's go to the height then. What's the reason for the 150 feet?
It's really to be a place marker on the horizon. If this is going to be a destination, the sooner you can see it from a retail standpoint, the better. And as you can see, even at the intersection of Lajimodi and Firmore, that's under a kilometer away. You know, it's still not all that significant on the horizon. The 65-foot high signs as well provide the opportunity for providing retail signage for a lot of the tenants that are more towards the south end of the site. It's a deep site, so it does give them some exposure at the main thoroughfare. So that's a marketability aspect.
Okay. Thank you. Next registered in support is Tony Spazzano. Support. Sam Spazzano. All right. Mike Armstrong. All right. That is the full list of registered speakers in support. We have some...
Just clarify if it's in opposition or...
Okay. We have Mr. Bodnarek of McGregor Farm Road registered as being in opposition or for information. So, sir, if you'd like to come and speak, if you are in opposition. I wonder if you can state your... name and address for us.
Okay.
And you registered in opposition, so I assume you
have. Yes. Okay, name is Bob Bodnarek. I live at 2935 McGregor Farm Road, but I'm also a counselor for the RM of Springfield.
Ah, okay.
And first off, I'd like to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak to you. came to the meeting to find out some information on it because we had, I had attended one of the first open houses, and we had some knowledge of it, but wanted to see what had changed and also just to find out some information about timeliness of when the changes are going to occur. We do have some concerns with the area, and as a neighboring municipality to the east, we have a number of issues that some of our residents have relayed to us just recently. Supposedly, they hadn't had an opportunity to go to the open houses. As members of the Partnership of the Capital Region, we have concerns that our council was not notified about the meeting, and we felt that our planning department should have been told that there was, in fact, I know with ours, when we have planning issues coming up in the boundaries, we usually try to inform the city of what those issues are. And while we understand that you're in the basically the you have jurisdiction over Plessy Road, it is a boundary road and should require a consultation with the municipality, specifically with our public works department. The closure will affect a lot of our residents and some of our farms, especially with the, in light of the closing of Navin and Simonton Road. We only have two axes right now. One is Plessy Road, and the other one is Murdoch, going to the north. Our concerns are related to the following: emergency services, access for farming operations, access for residents, and drainage concerns. Emergency services: currently, fire, police, and ambulance can access the area south of Fermor by way of Plessy and by Murdoch Road. With the closing of Murdoch, access will be limited, or the closing of Plessy, access will be limited to Murdoch, and should an emergency service be required, it'll force them now, if they miss Murdoch Road, they're going to end up having to go all the way to the center hub and back again, and that extra time may mean the difference between life and property being destroyed completely. Pardon me?
Where is Murdoch Road?
Murdoch Road is about a mile, mile and a half to the east. It's right by Tinkertown. So instead of coming in at Plessy at the bottom of the bridge, you'd have to go all the way to Tinkertown, turn around, and come back again. So it's almost 2 miles. So
you're looking at there's another intersection being created that connects to Plessy.
Pardon me?
There's another intersection being created that connects to Plessy.
It will be created at some point in time. We don't know when. Murdoch's not going to remain where it is. They're going to move it a little bit to the west. But it's the only two intersections.
Murdoch?
The only two intersections we have is Plessy and at Murdoch right now.
Whose services? Who's the emergency services that serve Murdoch?
They come out of Oak Bank or our industrial area on Gun Road.
So they wouldn't be coming from the...
They would be coming from the east.
From the east, not from the west.
Not from the west, no.
No.
So if they miss Murdoch, they have to go all the way to that center hub instead of taking Plessy and get in that way.
If they miss Murdoch.
If they miss Murdoch. And that's happened. We had an incident about a couple months ago where one of our farmers had a stroke, and they missed their turn, and they ended up coming in through Plessy. So it would save them approximately 5 minutes over going into that center hub, commercial hub, and then back again.
Okay,
so that's one of the concerns. The second one is the impact on the farming operations. We currently have a large farmer that, or large farming operation that's just to the south of Fermor and east of Plessy. Currently, what happens is he has land on both sides of Fermor, so he'll make a right out onto Fermor and then take Plessy around on the overpass, or underpass rather, and go to his farming operation on the north side. If we get rid of that, then he's going to be forced to try and go with his farm machinery into that center hub, which is virtually impossible. And the only other opportunity for him is to go backtrack all the way to the east again, 2 miles, and cut across at Murdoch Road by Tinkertown. And then in summertime, he's going to have to merge with all the traffic coming out of Tinkertown, Fun Mountain, and the campground. So this presents some issues as far as the farming operations are concerned. Similarly, for the residents, any of the residents using Fermor to head west will be impacted. And obviously, even though Plessy is a dangerous exit, we recognize that there should at least be a right in and a right out. So that would allow the people coming back into their homes at nighttime to be able to just go down Plessy Road instead of having to go down through the hub. So the last issue is drainage, and currently the drainage in that area, we have two drainage ditches. One of them follows the Navin drain, which is off of obviously Navin Road, and the other drainage is follows the railway line, cuts under Plessy Road, and goes through Symington or into along the edge of the railway land. So, and it takes quite a lot of water out of there, out of the area. So if we end up closing off Plessy and try to re-drain the property into the Navin drain, we don't think it's going to be able to handle it. We think there's too much water in the area to get to use only the one exit out of there. Anyway, in closing, until such time that the alternate access is developed and will not affect the lives and the safety of our residents, we would hope that that the decision will be to defer any closing of Plessy until such time. And again, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak here.
I had a question.
So, but the individual you're referring to, he's right now taking his farm machinery out onto Firmore or onto the shore?
They take it out onto Firmore. They have to cross to get to the north side, and their property's right, right on Plessy Road, on just north of TransCanada as well. They have land on both sides, on the south side and the north side. So in order to get to the, basically to get to the north side now, they end up having to either go the 2 miles out of the way and back again, or else end up having to go through that center hub, and obviously you're never going to be able to take farm machinery through that center part, so that'll leave them only the one way to get out, and that'll be the Murdoch exit.
Are there any legal issues with driving the farm machinery on what's in essence the TransCanada Highway then?
Unfortunately, that's the only way that they can get out of the area. There's no other way to get there.
It's a well-phrased response. All right, fair enough. Yeah. Any further questions?
Listen here. He's farming on the north side of Firmore?
There's a couple farms. There's Roland and James.
Okay, but they're not on the north side of Firmore across from this development.
Well, it's not across from the development, but if you take Plessy out, then it forces the tractors to go into that development to get across.
Why wouldn't they just go over to the east where the land is?
Well, it's right on Plessy.
There's nothing on Plessy across the street from...
Symington? There's a huge...
The Symington Yard is right across the street.
Well, across from Symington Yard on the east side of Plessy is all farmland.
Well, you can go to the east to get to that. It's far easier than you can use Firmore.
Well, it's basically 2 miles out of their way.
No.
Or a mile and a half, anyway, to come back.
You're backtracking if you use Plessy's and Firmore as well. I'm looking right at it.
Is the land north of Firmore? That's RM Springfield
as
well, then?
Yeah, it's all on the east side of Plessy's Road.
It's all on the east side of Plessy, all the way from the perimeter all the way to 15.
Has the RM of Springfield had any conversation about making a contribution to the upgrading of Plessy's Road?
We haven't been in contact at all, so like you said, that's something that I've asked Russ Wyatt to see if he could arrange a meeting so that we could discuss the situation.
Oh, yeah?
Because right now, the Plessy Road serves our purposes for what we need, because there's very restricted traffic on it, and obviously it's going to impact your Sage Creek development. Right now, there are no exits onto it, and I don't know if there ever will be, but...
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we have a number of individuals here for information. They can speak should they be interested, but you're under no obligation to speak. But if you do have questions or comments, first of those is Dan Novak. Novak? No.
Is it for information? Did you say?
Yes.
Okay.
Ben, yes, fair point. Is there anyone else who is here in opposition whose name I have not called and who wishes to speak? Okay, seeing no one, we will, thank you, turn to people who have registered for information. There's Mr. Novak, Mr. Ben Bredo. No? All right. Adam Lukow. Mr. Lukow, any questions, any comments? Mr. Lukow, you're registered at 35 Blue Mountain Road, which is one of the streets that's just south of the development. Is that right?
Correct. Correct. Okay. Yeah. First, I want to thank you for the committee too for this time. I would like to mention a couple of things. The cards that were put for the for this meeting were inadequate, and I believe a lot of my neighbors are not here in question or in asking for information because of this. The cards were, I went to the 65 Gary. Apparently there were six cards put on Dawson Road. Out of those six, I probably had seen three. One was right behind my place. Okay, also there was supposed to be a sign for the Triple M giving information to people that there is going to be something happening, like a meeting or whatever. The sign was inadequate as well. Okay, so those are the points I wanted to make at the beginning. And I just found out something that Triple M had mentioned, which is about the signs. The first meeting that they had, they did not, I was not able to make it. The second one, I was there. There was, pardon me, there was no information in regards to signs at that time. I'm not in the opposition to the way everything's being done, but I just have questions. I am in opposition to the signs because, number one, my bedroom happens to be right at the corner of their property. Those signs will be coming straight into ours and my neighbors as well. So also, I should like to point out in regards to the committee, your plan that you have there, you have, I believe, Eastman Drive going all the way to Fermor. Is it on the plan there? Well, yeah, I have it over here. It shows from the city that Eastman goes all the way to the thing. About 13 years ago, there was a committee with Mr. Vandell. ESSO applied for a variance on the property, and it was agreed on. There was an entrance put in by ESSO at the beginning of Fermor near Lajimodia. Now, one of the things I did find out also at the meetings that Triple M was planning to close that area off. Now, if that is the case, we're in opposition of that as well. And I also want clarification in regards to...
I mean, you just close off. You were on opposition to the closure of...
The entrance to Southland Park.
Yeah.
From Fermor.
Okay.
Because that was agreed upon about 13 years ago. And so, to this point, ESSO has not done anything with that property, by the way. But they put in an access road for the residents of Southland Park. Now, there is an area from Eastman Drive to the beginning of their project, which has gravel road, which they had mentioned. We would like to see that asphalted as well. By who? Doesn't matter. From Eastman Drive.
I think you're.
You mean Royal Mint?
Royal Mint Drive.
Oh, Royal Mint Drive. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Royal Mint Drive isn't open all the way to Fermor right now. It's Dawson Road. It's a little bit of Dawson Road that's connecting, and that's not part of this application.
Yeah, Dawson Road comes off for Fermor.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, this was it. Other road that was it Mint Road or whatever?
Royal Mint.
Royal Mint is that does not go to Fermor.
That's not. Yeah, that's right. It's not open.
Okay, there was a beginning point that was made like a beginning road earlier, which was agreed on by ESSO, and they did that in order to get their variance. I believe
Mr. Randall might remember that.
13 years is a long time.
Well, we were there together. Anyways, the thing is, like, in regards to the asphalting of that road, it's very necessary, because at the time, if I would have known what was going to be happening, I would have asked ESSO to, or somebody, or even the city, to asphalt it.
Right.
Because this is very much of a nuisance.
Okay, but that's not part of this application, I thought.
I understand, but also the somebody has to take care of that.
Yeah, but that's not part of this application.
I understand what you're saying,
yeah.
I agree with you, but it is not part of what the assessment
is. No, that's fine, but I'm just pointing it out to you that
if
that goes in, this has to go in as well at a later date by somebody.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I also wanted the clarification of multifamily. Multifamily, does that mean low income?
Low income?
Yeah.
No. Well, no. It's not.
No?
It's not. It's market-driven housing.
Okay.
Multifamily isn't an income designation.
Yeah.
It's a property use designation.
Okay. Now, the other factor was that since the gentleman that was here from, I believe, Quago, Sage Creek has increased a lot of the traffic to Furmar and 59, Lajimodi.
Mm-hmm.
The lights there are inadequate. They're 10 seconds for turning. They should be increased. I don't know what the other ones, the connection over there that was going to be on Furmar and whatever that street's going to be. You need adequate time to get out of the area. And a lot of this area over here, I assume that eventually we'll be using that exit, more so than going out to East Mint Drive. A lot of my neighbors are basically the same, thinking the same as I am, but most of them probably did not know that this meeting is happening. Okay, so
we can note that concern. I mean, that the timing of the lights isn't right before us today, but...
I'm sorry, could you repeat
that? The timing of the lights isn't before us today as part of the hearing, but we certainly, the area councillors here and can note that that's a concern with the volume shifting along Lash.
Now, the other thing was that at the last meeting with the Triple M, I had persistently asked them to notify me if there was going to be another meeting, like with the city or councillors or whoever, and I did not get an email in regarding to that there was a meeting today. So it was a good thing I just noticed that sign on that piece of land there and picked up a couple of pictures. It was on the weekend. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here as well. In asking questions or opposing the lights, because the signs, I mean, the signs are, if they make it comparable to even Southland, Southdale, that's fine. I mean, if they do 150 feet, Southdale is going to come. We want 300 feet. Is that right? What's fair? Something that is so that we don't have to come to our councillors and say that the lights are bothering us as citizens of Winnipeg.
So you'd be satisfied if there was no direct sight line to the sign?
Direct what?
So if you couldn't see the sign from your yard, would that be okay?
What kind of question is that?
Well, no, like you're saying that you're worried about the light from the sign coming to your yard. So if the sign was blocked, you know, if there was an evergreen tree or...
I'm talking about nighttime, okay?
Yeah, so am I.
Daytime. Nighttime you usually sleep. I would like to sleep.
Okay, but I'm trying to figure out, what is it, like you're saying that you're worried about the sign and the impact it has on your property.
I was never informed at the time at the meeting that there was going to be a 150-foot sign.
Okay. So in mitigating that concern,
mm-hmm.
if the sign was obstructed from your view, from your yard, or from any yard in that subdivision, would that be acceptable?
Yeah.
Okay.
What are you going to do, put a shade on the window?
Any further questions? Thank you.
Okay.
Next registered for information is Marcel Dagas of Dawson Road South. Marcel, if you could state your name and your address for our records, please.
Marcel Dagas at 1770 Dawson Road South. I'm in favor of the development. I just have a few questions to ask and concerns. Across the road from me is going to be multifamily dwellings, according to what the plan is. And I just like to know what height, what they're going to be. I get specifics on that. The other concern I have, is there any information on that that's available?
Okay, so that's, we'll ask the administration if they can reply to that question. Anybody from the administration? Yeah, it's probably more precise to have the applicant themselves who are coming, who are able to come back. So,
okay. There are maximums for CM. Medium. What are they?
The maximum height is 60 feet for a multifamily dwelling, and the lot area or the amount of density is calculated on the lot area divided by 800. So however many, that would calculate the number of.
So units. The maximum height would be 60 foot building.
Would be 60 feet,
including roof.
Depending on the type of roof.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's usually midway point if it's a peak roof.
Right. Okay. So that would be. Potentially across the road from me. I think, like Eric Bogan said, we're all individuals in this development. We're not.
Yeah. Marcel,
we're not all part of Qualico.
You'll see in Winnipeg, most of the development on multifamily doesn't exceed four stories, especially in suburban areas like that. Okay. That's where you sort of go from timber construction into concrete and steel construction, right. And the costs go up quite a bit. So there's no way to guarantee that, but you know, generally as a rule, four stories is what you'll see in that type of development.
Okay. Okay, that was one question. The other concern I have is, I think one of the councillors was asking about access from the south perimeter coming down Plessis, accessing Fermor. Right now, morning and evenings, there's a horrendous amount of traffic using that instead of going down 59.
Right.
It's a shortcut across. Potential dilemma I can see is all this traffic, now you even have a controlled intersection that allows them to come through. Come on to Dawson, hit Plessy, and go south to access south perimeter in behind. So there's a full access there for lots of traffic.
So is that an improvement or?
No, it's going right across my house.
Well, that more traffic would use the route because you've got a controlled intersection at.
Right now, the intersection at Plessy's and Fermor is a very dangerous intersection. If you make a left, you're crossing four lanes or three lanes of traffic to get on. And if they're turning right, they come through, make a right, go over the overpass, and go down Plessis, get to Transcona.
So something might have to be done to restrict the turning of traffic in the peak hours for shortcut traffic?
Off south perimeter or accessing south perimeter. From south perimeter, there's no traffic. There's a restricted 50-kilometer zone, but everybody travels at 100 kilometers and...
So the concern is with northbound traffic then?
Either or.
Both?
Okay. Both ways. Because now they have a perfect opportunity to come through the development and access Fermor. And then go down to the Plessy Loop and into Transcona. It's a shortcut. Instead of waiting for the lights at 59 and Lage, they all come through.
It's somewhat convoluted though.
It is, but...
compared to a straight line.
Give them opportunity. So that's just one concern.
Yeah.
Right now we have limited amount of traffic on Dawson Road. It's basically local traffic. All the traffic comes through at Plessy and Dawson. So that, and there's a stop sign at Plessy and Dawson, which is another hazard. Stop sign stopping traffic from crossing Dawson. Dawson has the right of way. most people shoot through that stop sign, they don't even see it. Yeah. Somebody's going to get killed there when he sees. But that's going to be controlled now because they're just going to make a left turn instead.
At Dawson and Plessy, did you say?
Right now, yes.
Is that 247?
They can make a left turn, come east, and then hit the new road access.
What's Dawson chip seal? Is it gravel or what?
Dawson Road is gravel, and so is Plessy. So it's just and there'll be more traffic than there is now, and now mornings and evenings, there's a lot of traffic. Just something that was never noted, and just had to be some type of controlled intersection or controlled speed, or better control the speed. It is posted at 50 kilometers, but what's posted and what's regulated is two different things.
Any further?
That's my only.
Okay, so the height.
The information about the size of the buildings across the road from me is a concern. Is it going to devalue my property or?
Just trying to make sure I guess the intersection of Dawson and Plessy is right at the edge of what we're dealing with. So.
Yeah, my property is basically 100 yards from the corner.
Okay. No further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
The applicant will have an opportunity to respond to that. And our final registered attendee is Sil Desolet. Desolet. Sil. All right, Sil, we will move on then. And is there anyone in opposition or for information whose name I have not called, who wishes to speak, who is not registered? And we'll then go back to familiar faces of Mr. Ward, McNeil, and Rosen. The applicant has a right to speak in rebuttal before we proceed to consider the matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will limit my remarks, I think, to a couple of the key points of concern with respect to some of the points that were raised. For clarification with respect to the closing of Plessy's, where it intersects Firmore, with or without this development, the city needs to rebuild Firmore Avenue within the next few years. And at that point, that access point will be closed regardless of the development. This development assists the city in that respect in that it picks up some of those costs as part of that. But in terms of the concern about limiting access to Firmore Avenue from the farm community, that's going to happen regardless. This is considered to be a very dangerous intersection, and in terms of the upgrade of the street, it will be eliminated and replaced with a new intersection. And so I think that that's part of the evolution and growth of the city, and that's going to have to be sorted out as we move forward, but it's not really necessarily being precipitated by this application. Concerns about drainage, etc., will be taken into account, and in fact, as this area that we're talking about develops with new retention ponds, some of the drainage that would have otherwise been in the ditches is now going to be controlled through the stormwater management plan for this site and eventually for Qualico's as well. One of the concerns that was raised by Springfield was that they don't want the Plessy's Road intersection closed until there is an alternative, and we agree with that. The intent isn't to close one in advance of the other. It's when the new intersection is developed, when Firmore is upgraded at that point, it would be closed. So we certainly have no problem with that, and in fact, that would be anticipated. With respect to the second presenter's concerns from the resident from Southland Park. Principal concern that I heard, two parts. One had to do with access, which really is outside the jurisdiction of our application, what he was talking about in terms of the access through the Imperial lands. The second one, though, with respect to concern about light spilling into their property from the signage, particularly the higher signage that we've proposed. I have a suggestion as to which may address a couple of concerns here that have been put on the table. One is that the signage that we've proposed is a four-sided sign, which is the reason for the high number of square feet, because each sign face is calculated separately. If it were a single double-sided sign face, the calculation is done differently, if I'm not mistaken, Rob. We would be prepared to accept a two-sided sign rather than the four we've proposed. We'd be prepared to design it in such a way so that any of the light coming from the sign face at night is shielded so it does not create a problem or an issue for the residents in Southland Park. I think that's the mechanics of how we orientate the sign. We wouldn't need the square footage. I'm not sure quite how to deal with this, Rob, but I think we're looking at square footage somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 square feet per side. But if it's calculated as a double-sided sign, then that's a single variance of 500 square feet on that sign. And the reason that I'm saying that is that if you go from a four-sided sign to a two-sided, we also have to keep in mind the proportions and the scale of everything. You don't want it to be too small, and I think 500 per sign face is appropriate for that location and size. And I think that would address that particular concern raised by that resident. I'm not sure quite how to address Marcel's concern about short-cutting traffic. That's, in a sense, an existing condition. This will change things to a certain degree in that he's correct. There will now be a signalized intersection. But if you consider the much broader picture long-term, some of the other changes that we anticipate that are going to happen in that quadrant is eventually we expect there's going to be an extension of Bishop Brandon Boulevard, which will cross the Plessis Road and provide different means of getting to Transcona and elsewhere when it gets built. As well, we're aware that the province's long-term plan with respect to the Perimeter Highway is to limit access to the Perimeter Highway and eliminate a number of intersections, and I believe that maybe including Plessis Road. But those are further in the future, but it's not something that we can deal with within the subdivision. And I don't think that anything that we're proposing here is going to create a situation where it becomes untenable for people in the area. There may be some enforcement issues that, again, are beyond our control. I think with that, Mr. Chairman, I will limit my comments. I think those are the key points that I heard and the points that I could actually respond to. Certainly can answer any other questions that may have arisen as a result of those questions or others that may have come up in the councillors' minds since I first presented.
While my colleagues are ruminating, I had a question just about Dawson Road being gravel. Is there anything in the, I may have missed this earlier and I apologize, but did anything in this, in the precinct plan or this plan that would change the status of that?
To a certain extent, but not the full length. We will be upgrading, we're going to be relocating a portion of Dawson, and we're going to be upgrading Dawson to a full paved, proper boulevards, lighting, and everything else. But that would go to the western limit of our development. There will be a gap there between there and the entrance to Southland Park that would be the existing portion of Dawson.
So the area that you just described would include that area that runs from Plessy up to the new road, the new, okay.
So in front of Marcel's, I can't remember his last name, the guest?
Yes, that all gets.
That will be paved so the dust issue gets mitigated?
Everything within the boundaries of the subdivision will be built to current city urban standards, which will include paved streets, curbs, boulevards, drainage, landscaping, and lighting. And so that affects both Dawson Road as it passes in front of Marcel's property, and it affects the western limit adjacent to Southland Park, but to the limits of our subdivision. So there will be a portion of it will be corrected.
Thank you for clarifying that.
So the line values look pretty good.
Paul, tell me a little bit about phasing and timelines. Like what?
Yes, I can address that. In terms of the timing, these applications, of course, have to work their way through the rest of the approval processes, and a development agreement has to be drawn up and executed. We would be looking at commencing.
The front-ending agreement needs to be done first. And the
all of those things have to be put in place.
Transportation, the transportation.
Cost-sharing agreement cost-sharing. Has to be in place as well. Assuming that all of those follow the normal course of proceedings and the timelines, we would expect those to be in place sometime late fall, early winter, or certainly the winter of 2014 to 15, which would give us the ability then to begin the servicing of the site in 2015. Generally, there's about a year's worth of servicing to be done. In this case, that includes the upgrading of firmware, the beginning of the upgrading of firmware, which is going to be undertaken by the developer in advance on behalf of the city, that portion of that roadway. So the first residential development that we could begin to see that we would expect would be occupancies probably in the fall of 2016, aiming for having display homes or display suites open for the parade of homes in that fall, and really hitting its full stride in about 2017. The absorption is really market-driven to a certain extent as to how many units we would build per year. If the market remains as strong as it is today, we could anticipate upwards of about 200 occupancies per year, possibly a little higher. It depends. By that time, there will be competing subdivisions in this area of Sage Creek. Jamstar subdivision may be on line at that time as well. But that's in the order. And based on the number of units that we're talking about, that's probably about a 10-year build-out. Again, market-driven to a certain extent. That's the residential, and Brian's just reminding me, the commercial follows a little different pattern. There's clearly demand right now in the area for additional commercial and retail space. We did do a commercial analysis working with C.B. Richard Ellis. There's almost no current available commercial lands in this quadrant of the city, and so there's a strong demand for this area. We would expect the commercial areas to begin develop in that same time frame with the first. There's two parts of the commercial. There's that that's driven by the subdivision itself, which tends to be more things like drugstores and grocery stores, and then there's others that are driven by a much larger market area. And I think we'll see some of those retailers arriving on the scene a little earlier. But again, the time frame would be in the 2016, probably commencing in that, and then the time that it takes for that to develop. This is a 50-acre commercial site. That could take 8 years to develop out. So it's not going to happen all overnight. We're not going to see this development dramatically change the area within a year, but it'll be a progressive improvement.
The streets do not get closed until you mentioned that Dawson Road is operational?
Correct. I mean, we have a lot of work to do at Dawson. We can't really close Plessis and be doing that work first. So I think what the sequence of the timing would be is that the new intersection would be created, Dawson Road would be upgraded, and only at that point would this section of Plessis be closed. The legal mechanics of that might be a little different in terms of when that takes place, but through the development agreement, there are other precedents where secondary access roads have been left open for a period of time to allow for public access through an area, and that would certainly be the case here. There would be no intent to cut off the access on Plessis until there was an alternative and improved access.
Okay. Go ahead if you have one.
Just two quick ones. The Firmore construction, on your timeline, construction on Firmore would start in 15?
I think that's correct. Ken, you can correct me if I'm wrong. The actual design, detailed design, might take a little longer.
So. It depends to some degree on how quickly the design can get going, but I think the intention would be to do the detailed design as quickly as possible once the all the I's been dotted and T's been crossed, and then move forward with construction either 15 or 16. But it'll be, I think, phased construction where you do one side and then you do the other. And you leave, you know, traffic moving on one side, and then you switch it over. So it'll be, that's the reason for it being a two-year, at least a two-year program.
So more than likely it'll be a 16-17 construction?
It's hard, yeah, probably for construction, yes. The design will take some time. Of course, we can't do anything in the winter. So it'll be, you know, spring of 16, I would suspect, probably at the latest.
Yeah.
The need for the Firmore upgrading isn't driven immediately. The day the subdivision starts development, we're talking about, if I'm correct in my time frame, of perhaps 200 absorption in the residential, that's over that first year. 200 additional vehicles are not going to create that much of a difference. It's really to time that in such a way that the construction of Firmore takes place in time for the increased intensity of the uses on the site. It doesn't all have to be in place in year one, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I wasn't thinking of it from that perspective. I was thinking of it from the perspective of getting it cleaned up and getting it safe again. Like that is a pretty sketchy piece of road in the city right now.
Yes, it is, particularly from an entry point at our front door to the city.
There was a couple of comments made on about notice and notification. One was the resident from South Park talking about the signs not being up on the property. I know we advertise by signs and we advertise in the newspapers. And the other was the councillor from, or I don't know, it's councillor of the Reeve from the RM, talking about not being engaged with as far as any kind of consultation with the RM. Can you speak to both those pieces?
I could, although Brian is probably the better, particularly with the RM, and I can, or actually on both points, because in fact we did make efforts in both cases to provide some notification or at least open dialogue in that respect. Brian?
Sure. So, I can start with the councillor from Springfield. So we were in touch with the development officer twice during the precinct planning process, and we did go out there one time early in the process to meet with him and a councillor to go over the precinct plan at a high level. And then later on in the process, I did get in touch with the development officer to let him know that we would be proposing to close that piece of Plessy's. And he indicated he would let his council know and that they may have some comment, but that is the extent of it. As far as the local residents go, we did send a notice of the precinct plan hearing because there aren't the city required notifications because it wasn't a statutory plan. So we sent an email out to anyone who had provided us with an email address through any sort of consultation or contact to let them know about the precinct plan hearing. There was no specific email about this DASED public hearing given the city's standard requirements for notification.
But you did meet the standard requirement of posting the signs as required on the site and whatever the newspaper notification
yes,
is.
Yes, those were done.
Okay. I had a question maybe for Bodan, or he's been sitting there for a while, but just that we've heard a couple of times, and this relates back to the question from RM of Springfield. We've heard from the applicant that the long-range or short-range city plan is to close off the Plessy access into Fermor anyway, as Fermor is widened out. So that statement's been made a couple of times. What is that? Is that an accurate characterization? Is the city's plan to close off the Plessy intersection at Fermor, regardless of whether this application takes place?
That was the intention of the Public Works Department, and when this application was initially made approximately a year ago at this time, when I spoke with Brian Ward, it was initially circulated on a preliminary basis to Public Works for comment on the proposal, and at that time they had requested that Plessis be closed from Fermor South for a future improvement in that area. So a year ago, that was initiated by Public Works at the request. As the application moved forward, it had expanded, the closure had expanded further south to Simonton Road.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
I'm ready to move a motion.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Vandell. Okay. And just for clarity, Madam Clerk, is this it's a consolidated hearing, so this is on all numbers 2 through 6. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Start
number 2. We do everyone separately, and okay. My intent tonight is to move the public representations be concluded on all of the items. Okay. So that's my first motion. I'll move the receipt of public representations be concluded.
All those in favor? Aye. Contrary, that's